out on this rare opportunity.
Hello, WPAI listeners and supporters. Tune in Monday, September 18th from 7 to 9 p.m. for the third report of 2017 from the WPAI Local Station Board. This month, you'll hear from various members of the board. They'll talk about their responsibilities, recent developments throughout the network, and ask for your ideas on how to build a stronger WPAI. So, mark that date on your calendar. Monday, September 18th, 7 to 9 p.m., the third report of 2017 from the WPAI Local Station Board. Only on WPAI in New York, 99.5 FM, streaming at WPAI.org.
Hello, I'm David Rothenberg, and I'll be the keynote speaker at the 11th Anniversary Awards Dinner for Citizens Against Recidivism, a not-for-profit organization that addresses the needs of the formerly and the currently incarcerated. The event will be held at the Malcolm X and Betty Shabazz Center on Saturday night, October 21st, from 5:30 till 9. For ticket information, please go to www.citizensinc.org or call 347-626-7233, extension 3. Again, for ticket information, please go to www.citizensinc.org or call 347-626-7233. And don't forget extension 3. I'm David Rothenberg, and I hope to see you there.
Hey, this is Shaka Khan, and you're listening to WBAI New York, 99.5 FM.
Good morning. This is Hour of the Wolf, a weekly program dedicated to science fiction, fantasy, enchantment, and yes, the imagination. My name is Jim Freund. With us this morning, Cassandra Caw, who I think holds the record for distance longest traveled to come to, well, this building. We'll discuss that in a bit. Stay tuned. Thank you.
Gun control to Major Tom. Gun control to Major Tom. Take your protein pills and put your helmet on. Gun control to Major Tom. Commencing countdown, engines on. Check ignition and may God's love be with you.
Natalie Merchant, did you think only Bowie did that song? Well, only Bowie really could really do that song. But Natalie Merchant did a bleeping good version. And that was live. I'm not quite sure how she got the echo effect in there as she did. And speaking of echo effects, you're tuned to listener-sponsored, non-commercial Pacifica Radio in New York City, WBAI, broadcasting at 99.5 FM. This program is Hour of the Wolf. My name is Jim Freund. Announcements. Let's do all the announcements. I don't have any announcements. Yes, I do. Yes, I have. The announcement is that you missed last week's New York Review of Science Fiction reading. Shame on you. It was wonderful. And I'd really, really, really like to thank Ken Gale for filling in for me, as well as filling in for Lister, because I was supposed to fill in for Lister. But Ken filled in for both and did a bang-up job, as he always does, which is what I, well, counted on. And then, but you didn't miss it altogether because you can go to, you can either go to Livestream and just search for NYRSF, you all know how to spell that, right? NYRSF, as in New York Review of Science Fiction, and look for the reading with Randy Dawn. That's Randy with two E's on the end. And, oh, hallelujah, my glasses showed up. They were sent special delivery. Were they at the pub? They're at the pub as opposed to at the bar. Okay. By the way, you might want to sit closer. We have an in-studio audience, if you want to wear headphones. No, I am not doing Facebook Live because it's too distracting for me to get out the phone, my spiffy phone, and that's the brand name, by the way. I totally endorse it. Go out and ask for a spiffy phone, you know. That would be a good name. That would be a very good name for the technology. Yes, the new Spiffy Model 3, the Spiffy 3. But the next, so you can watch Randy Dawn and Cassandra Caw read from last week. It's time travel. Now, we can't time travel forward in this particular realm. Pardon me. But what I can do is I can tell you to join us October 3rd, Tuesday, October 3rd, when we're back to the first Tuesday of every month, which is sort of our standard. And our readers will be Michael Swanwick, who, the way I put it, is has been nominated for more of the major, that's to say the World Fantasy Award, Nebula Award and Hugo Award than anybody else in the history of the genre, to which Michael's usual response is, which means that I've lost more often than anybody else. He's one of you two. And with him, Gardner Dozois. Gardner used to be a regular mainstay at the NYRSF readings and indeed occasionally on Hour of the Wolf. And Gardner has had a very rough time, and I won't go into detail, over the last couple of years, the last 10 years. And this is his first public reading, I dare say, in over 10 years. And I am thrilled to have him. He was, of course, the editor of Asimov's magazine for, about 25 years, something like that. And he's a darn good writer. And he is, despite his efforts, a very sweet and loving human being. So come out and meet them all. Admission is free, but we look at you cross-eyed if you don't donate money. So, and may I say, by the way, that we did very well last week. We broke even. And to me, if we break even and we have a good time and we get a good video out of it, then we have met our goals. So, Caw, K-H-A-W?
Correct.
Okay, and no Caw. Hold on, let me put on my headphones and make sure that I've got you on the right mic, if I can find out. Okay. Say correct again.
Correct.
Wow, that's a first. That on the first shot. Now, you see, you're the first mic over there. So you would figure that the first potentiometer over here would control your mic. No, it's the fourth. I don't know why, but as long as we can hear you, we are happy.
So am I.
Now people can't see you. Now, I have been experimenting since I got my new phone with Facebook Live, but when I am on my own and without my intern / assistant, I wish I could say I was joking, but no, I actually have somehow acquired one, and she's brilliant. I won't say her name on the air until she's actually, like, here in person and ready to acknowledge same. Although she has, 2 months ago at the New York Review of Science Fiction readings, where she had never seen the equipment or anything, and it's complicated. Actually, Cassandra's was the first one that I did the engineering on my own, as overseen by Terrence Taylor, and I didn't totally screw it up.
Well, I'm on it.
Which is amazing. But Madeline sat down one time when I was supposed to be doing it and just sort of took over. And it's like, oh, my God. Outside of Terrence, who, like, does this stuff for PBS. So that's cheating. He's a professional. She's the best engineer we've had. And she was an intern for WBAI and quit.
Oh, no.
Which I would say means that she passed the intelligence test. I didn't say that.
You absolutely did.
Mm.
On live radio, too.
No, yeah, on live radio, yes, but in my imagination, I didn't.
We'll go ahead, I'm sure.
And my imagination is a vivid place. So.
I think that is just typical of anyone in speculative fiction.
Yeah, yeah. So, let's see. I had somebody. Okay, yeah, Karen Lord, she's nothing. She comes from the Caribbean. I've had people on the air from Finland.
Mm-hmm.
And from actually living all the way in Scotland, but they really needed, like, closed captioning in order to understand what they were saying. The Scots. You can't watch certain episodes of Doctor Who because too much Scottish. too much Scottish accents. David Tennant. And yes, I have had somebody who came from somewhere in the middle of the Pacific, and I'm trying to remember her name. Lovely writer. But anyway, Cassandra.
Yes.
Comes from
mm-hmm.
Malaysia. Actually, the Bronx, but Malaysia is included in there somewhere, right? Which came first?
Definitely Malaysia. I was born and raised there, and from the age of 25, I started traveling and never really stopped.
Wow. So, is there any... I've seen many places on Facebook that you have called home.
New York is still the city of my heart. The first time I came here, I expected to hate New York. But as the skyline pulled up from the distance, I just took one look at it and fell straight in love.
Bless you. When somebody says, I'm going to be moving to blah, 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 I just see... You're a traitor. That's all there is to it. You've left us. I'll still be writing. I'll still visit. I'll be on a phone call. You're a turncoat. You've left the fold. The iron gate will open whenever you show up. But outside of that, there is now an iron gate between us. So the iron gate is always open for you because you said the right words.
I will hope so. New York remains the only city. Every time I'm here, I can practically hear the heartbeat in the pavement. She just sings in a way that no other city does in the world.
Where were you schooled?
I was schooled in Malaysia.
Uh-huh. And did you college in Malaysia?
I did indeed college in Malaysia.
And did you major? I should mention I'm a high school dropout. So I'm not going to one-up you. Or I am. It's like, you spent all that time in school.
Yes, a college in Malaysia. I studied computer programming, specialized in artificial intelligence. Got bored after a few years and basically ran away from
to acquire true intelligence.
Yes, to be a writer, to learn what it's like to be a starving artist.
Yeah, but so you didn't do writing classes or...
Absolutely not. English is my third language, in fact.
Your third language.
Correct.
How many languages do you have altogether?
Five.
Five. My father had five. I have New York and Brooklyn, basically. And, that about covers it. And I'm born of refugee parents from Germany. So you'd think I would know a word of German, and I do. Freund. That's the word from German that I know.
What about Dankeschön?
Dankeschön, Gesundheit, yes. Yeah.
You can speak it.
I can actually watch a Fassbender movie or better yet, a Wim Wenders movie in German. Like, oh God, now why am I blanking? My favorite film of his, one of my top 10 favorite movies, period, bar none. With the angels that look over Berlin.
I don't watch starring movies Bruno Gass. Anywhere near enough.
Oh, this is a good one.
I'll keep it in mind.
This is a brilliant film. I'll keep it brief, but it's about this angel mm-hmm. who, what angels basically do is they watch humanity. They watch people, and they collect stories. They hang out a lot in the library, in the big library in Berlin, and they get stories from Holocaust survivors mm-hmm. and from neo-Nazis and from this and that. And this one angel sees a circus performer and falls in love and wants to become human. And he goes over to near the circus. There is a little hot dog stand. And at the stand, he sees Peter Falk playing an actor named Peter Falk, who does a TV series called Columbo. And he's filming an episode of Columbo in Berlin, which, by the way, he really was. And Falk can see the angel and talks to the angel and tells him mm-hmm. how to become a human. And all that. This is an amazing, amazing, wonderful film. I won't give away a big spoiler, which happens about, I shouldn't use the word spoiler, reveal. Michael Bishop taught me that. He said, oh yes, there's a reveal about a third of the way in the story that will take away pleasure from the listeners if they're told too far in advance. And
I thought, more elegant.
Much more elegant, you know, and take that, John Clute. John Clute says there's no such thing as a spoiler. And for purposes of certain panels at cons, he's right. But there are things, you know, like simply saying, she's a guy, that could spoil a movie mm-hmm. in which the words, she's a guy, would pertain to. And I see you don't know which film I'm talking nope. about, but... But that would, you see, that would spoil it because you might see it otherwise. Gates of Heaven, whatever. One second. Okay, I'm going to have to resort to Spiffy over here.
Dun, 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 dun.
Yeah, I can't say okay, Spiffy. Okay, Google. Name films by Wim Wenders. Let's see if it knows Wim as opposed to Wim. Okay, Ernest Wilhelm is his name? Wenders? I had no idea. No, not Salt of the Earth, not Paris. Wings of Desire.
I'll have to check that out.
Oh, yes. Wings of Desire. It's a fantasy film. I mean, I told you mm-hmm. half the plot. But that doesn't reveal much of the movie because much of it is poetry. It's more poetry than prose.
Fascinating.
And lovely, lovely, wonderful film. So, why did I get into that instead of having you talk? Because I love to hear me talk. 50 years at WBAI. Oh, yes.
Uh-oh.
An announcement. Sorry. Yeah, October 2nd, Monday, October 2nd, I was talking before about Tuesday, October 3rd, which, by the way, that event with Michael Swanwick and Gordon mm-hmm. d'Ozois is at 388 Atlantic Avenue in Brooklyn, starts at 7 p.m. Okay. The day before, over 99.5 FM in New York. Got a station break in there. They're finally acknowledging that as of last May 1st, I've worked here 50 years. Hopefully I'll get like a little Hershey chocolate coin for that, which does me no good because I'm diabetic. So, maybe for that treat. And and they expressed, you know, what do you want? And it's like, no, I don't want to go on the air and talk about what I've done for 50 years. So James Irsay, who has been here like 2 years less than I, mm-hmm. And Janet Coleman, who's been here 2 years more than I, will all just talk from 3 to 5 p.m. And we'll talk. And between us, it's 150 years of WBAI.
Gosh darn.
Yeah. Gall darn. So I was not happy when my 50th anniversary, despite any number of emails and encounters in hallways here, was blithely ignored.
Oh.
But now they're giving me actually a very nice time slot to talk about it. So there. So that's October 2nd at 3 p.m.
Don't miss it.
Don't miss it. I hope I don't miss it. It's happened once. I'll tell that story off the air. My guests showed up. I didn't.
Oh, God.
And they were Patrick Nielsen Hayden and Teresa Nielsen Hayden. And I left them standing on a street corner in the middle of 36th Street and 8th Avenue. Horrible place.
Oh, dear Lord.
To leave them in the middle of the night. And my only defense was, and it's not a bad one, that when I woke up and had grand clang as a result of realizing that I'd missed a show, I had a 104-something temperature.
That's a reasonable reason to miss a thing.
Yeah. But I haven't forgiven me yet.
Aww.
And Patrick likes to...
bring up the story?
He likes to needle me because he knows... I mean, he's fine about it.
I'm sure he'll need us because he loves you.
But yeah. Well, I don't know him that well, but well enough that he knows how to needle me. And the fact that he doesn't know me exceedingly well won't stop him.
Hasn't stopped many people.
And he's very nice. For those who don't know, Patrick is... what is he now? Is he the editor at Tor Books?
Given that they're my publishers, I do not dare say anything definitive on air, just in case somebody gets angry.
Yeah, Tor.com, I think, is more or less run by Liz Gorinsky.
Mm-hmm.
Tor Books, I think, is... I think Patrick took over David Hartwell's job, which would make him editor. Of course, Tom Doherty is the publisher. I did a six-hour interview with Tom.
Gosh darn.
Yeah, and I'm going to have to whittle that down.
Good luck.
I may whittle it down to three episodes of Hour of the Wolf. He's worth it. The history of Tor Books and his history in science fiction from Ace Books and his funding Bane Books and stuff like that. Pretty fascinating. So what part of New York were you living in when you were living here?
Let's see. I lived in Forest Hills for a span of time.
I'm from Jackson Heights. I know Forest Hills.
I've also lived in Kingsbridge in the Bronx.
Okay.
And I spent some time in Harlem.
Okay.
I think that's about it.
Yeah.
Maybe.
Well, I know Forest Hills. And until 3 years ago, we were in Harlem.
Oh.
The studios were up at CUNY, at CCNY there. And even though it was 1 a.m., it was a lovely neighborhood, actually. Mm-hmm. So despite whatever fears long... lived New Yorkers may have about the neighborhood.
It could be worse, New Yorkers. You could be living in Malaysia.
What is life like living there, briefly?
Delicious.
You see, that would have been my favorite answer because I love Malaysian food, starting with the bread, starting with the heat in the food, the curries. Malaysian curry is lovely.
Yes.
And living in Jackson Heights, we have some decent Malaysian restaurants.
I have to check that out.
Yeah, there are a couple. There are a couple.
I will have to admit, there was this once in Boston. A work colleague decided to bring my company and everyone involved in it to a Malaysian restaurant. He declared that it was the best Malaysian restaurant in Boston. It wasn't. It got to the point where my boss had to pull me down by my shoulder. Because I was screaming, let me go into the kitchen. I need to fix this. This is bringing shame to my country. I will go cook. I can do this. He's like, no, sit. Please, for the love of God, sit down.
Do you cook?
Yes, fantastically.
I'm good. I'm quite good. But I don't know from Malaysian cooking. I've done a little Indian A lot of Chinese. When I say Chinese, generally Sichuan. Mm. And a lot of American and a lot of stuff I make up. I've gotten brave enough to start making up.
That's the best kind of food.
Weirdness. Okay, so my big invention, crossing cultures, mm-hmm. and this really works and sounds weird, but it's really good. Hot dogs on naan.
I can see that. That would absolutely work.
Doesn't it? Yes. Yeah, it really does. And, you know, choose your topping. If you want to be really weird, just a little, don't overdo it, a little pollock paneer.
I have to try that now. I'm going to be obsessed about that forever. Thank you.
Yeah.
This is just going to cause an obsession.
Yeah, and so I don't know what that's throw it together style. Of cooking, I like doing that, but you cook Malaysian primarily, or what?
I do a lot of Malaysian food. That is where my roots are. So lots of curries, a lot of Hokkien cuisine. I also do a lot of Japanese. While I was traveling, I used to exchange a lot of my cooking for a place to sleep. So I've gotten very good at catering.
That's a very, very fair. Kind of a thing.
Mm-hmm.
So how long are you in? So what is your current actual place of residence?
Airports.
Wow. Okay, that was a Tom Hanks movie. Not a very good one.
It was okay. Come on.
It was okay. But in the spectrum of Tom Hanks and Steven Spielberg collaborations, not up there. With, Bridge of Spies.
I need to watch that. You don't have to rub it in.
Yeah. Well, nobody really seems to know that movie, and I don't know why, even though it's only 2 years old.
I promise I will remedy that.
Yeah. So, yeah. No, it's good. It's on streaming services. assuming that that one subscribes to same.
Mm-hmm.
You can get it, although, that's a whole other thing. Have you heard of an app called Canopy with a K?
I have not.
It lets you stream movies from your local library.
Mm-hmm.
So if they have like a DVD or two DVDs of a title and you use this app, you put in your library card number, and assuming they have the movie on their shelves, you can just stream it then and there.
That sounds a lot more ethical than my current options. I'll consider it.
I am familiar with those. As I see Doctor Who before they see it in England.
Mm-hmm.
Well, let me explain. Let's say Doctor Who goes on at 9 p.m. Mm-hmm. I think it's actually 7:15 or something. Let's say it goes on at 9 p.m. Some people find a way to make it available as soon as it goes off the air. It takes them about, 45 minutes to an hour. To make it accessible. And in New York, that's 5 p.m. So I've got it by 5:30 or 6 o'clock. So they have to wait till 9 to watch it. I can watch it at 6.
You could absolutely blackmail people over reveals at that point.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah. As the FBI takes me away. All this is fiction, folks. I did not really say that on the radio. It's fiction. This is a science fiction show. You know I made that up, right? Yeah, BS. Anyway. No, I don't use the dark net. In fact, I don't use the web. I don't use BitNet. I really don't. I warn everybody, don't do it. I'm serious. You can be traced years later. Now.
On to more cheerful subject.
Usenet, on the other hand, is something we won't discuss. On to a more cheerful subject. So what caused you to start writing?
Fiction.
Oh, and a quick question.
Yes.
How long is your reading selection going to be?
My reading selection? Can you explain that?
You're going to read for us.
Yes. It's about 5,000 words.
That doesn't mean anything to me. It sounds a little long.
Okay. I do have a science fiction thing that will probably run about 15 to 20 minutes.
That would be better.
I'll go with that.
Just thinking in terms of the time, so maybe in about 25, like at 2 a.m. New York time, because there are people listening from other places, or in the podcast.
Mm-hmm.
No, we actually, very occasionally get phone calls from, are you ready, Bulgaria.
I hope I get some Bulgarian callers then.
Well, it's just It's just one.
Oh.
But he's Bobson is his name, and he's a great caller. I just love the idea of here we are live on the air in New York City. There's a caller from Bulgaria. You know, now that I say that, I suspect him. He's always after me on Facebook. Anyway.
Purple Hippopotamus.
What? Purple Hippopotamus. Oh, God, you reminded me. I didn't find out what happened on Safari Live this morning in South Africa. Did the two leopards stay together or not? Anyway. One of these years, mm-hmm. on the air, I will have to talk about my Safari Live addiction. This is a TV show that's on the air 6 hours a day.
Oh, wow.
On the internet, actually.
As all things are these days.
But this is exactly what the name says. It's on in New York at 9:30 in the morning and at midnight. And just Google up Safari Live. It'll take you to YouTube. And you watch these
majestic beasts.
Well, yes, but presenters.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, world's top flight camera people on jeeps, both in South Africa and Kenya, and filming the beasts live. And it's real. And it's live. And people say, oh, that's not live. And it's like, oh, well, you can contact us on Twitter. And somebody says, are you actually live? Sign Stanley. And they say, yes, Stanley.
Awesome.
So it's like, oh, my God. So that was a big drama. Two young male leopards, both of them emancipated too early from their parents, meeting and not knowing whether to fight or travel together. And just then the show had, they kept it going for an additional 7 minutes, but then they were like going to go to sleep. So that's me not talking about it.
Imagine what happened when he starts talking about it.
So if you, oh, that'll be a 2-hour show. That'll be a whole 2-hour show, believe me. And it'll probably be concurrent. It is actually concurrent. They're on right now. They're on for another 2 hours right now, as a matter of fact, another 90 minutes till 3 a.m. New York time. For them, it's just early evening. And it's just getting out of winter in South Africa. And in Kenya, they're right on the equator. And the great migration is just ending. Mm-hmm. But that's gory. That's not fun to watch all those zebra and wildebeest.
I can imagine.
They get savaged. Anyway, I prefer watching bush babies over watching the big cats. So your place of choice at this point would be, if you had to put a pin somewhere on the map?
It would be New York.
It would be.
Hardinzoll.
Yeah. Of what countries are you citizen?
I am a citizen of Malaysia still. I also have work visas in 3 different countries.
Wow. Very cool. And, okay, so I was asking more about your writing earlier.
Yes, sir.
Which is why you're here. How long ago did you start writing and what compelled you?
I started writing nonfiction about 8 years ago. In terms of fiction, I got my start about 2.5 years ago.
And you've sold how many stories in those 2.5 years? Every writer at home, I warn you now, either put your fingers in your ears and go, blah, 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 or else just be ready to be shamed.
34 stories.
Oh, Jesus.
Most of which are prose stories.
Yeah. Meaning a professional paying market.
Yes, sir.
But as defined by science fiction.
Correct.
Writers of America.
Mm-hmm.
That's disgusting. That's wonderful.
Thank you.
That's
really
amazing. No, that's quite a feat. There's probably a record in there, especially considering the quality of the stories.
Thank you.
Which are so good.
I'm really hoping to hit 24 this year.
You mentioned that when first we were emailing each other. Yeah. So what is a Cassandra Kaw story? What would you say? I have my concept in two words, but...
Oh, God.
Aside from the words Cassandra Kaw.
If you're going by what my followers have raised, a Cassandra Kaw story tends to be slightly gory, extremely weird, a lot of architectural magic, body shifting, body horror, a lot of revisions of fairy tales in a very dark, grim sort of way, but also...
This is how it, with that kind of stuff, that's why we were introduced by Datlo.
Yes. She bought these deathless bones for me, which is still live on Tor.com. And it's apparently very horrific. I wasn't very sure, but everyone else thinks it is.
Well, yeah. My partner who writes what she would consider fantasy or urban fantasy got from, in fact, from Ellen Datlow, three honorable mentions.
Oh, wow.
For horror stories. And Barbara was saying, I don't write horror. And I said, shh. You just got three honorable mentions as best writer in horror. You're a horror writer. Live with it. Mm. You know, so, but I would say dark fantasy. Some of your stuff is gory. I, as listeners know, am not a fan of gory. Mm-hmm. I squirm. I'm a wuss. And not afraid to admit it.
That is courageous unto itself.
It's not just a preference, but there is some gory stuff that doesn't bother me as long as it somehow works organically with the story. Sunny Moraine is very good at that.
Yes, very much so.
I
love her work.
Yeah, and I do the audio editing for Nightmare and Lightspeed magazine, and I was introduced to the work of Sunny Moraine through editing some of her stories. And, oh my God, I was like shivering, squirming through one of those stories and thinking, this is really great stuff at the same time. And when I finally met her at a reader con, she just gave me a grin and said, so it worked, huh? She's great. She actually came down from up from Washington just to be on the show.
Oh, wow.
She actually did a round trip Bolt bus.
Oh, Jesus.
Just to be on the show. She's very cool. She's very nice. And I met her at a party at Ms. Bolander's house, Brooke Bolander's house.
Was it a Halloween party?
It was.
Everyone was there at the Halloween party except me. Oh.
Yeah, well, you'll have to make up for it.
At some point, I'm certain.
I do a party you'll have to come to. It's in December. It's
I'll make sure to be in town for that.
Do that. It's Saturnalia. Mm. That's the holiday that we celebrate, is Saturnalia. I might have chosen Yule, given the background of this radio show with Margot Adler. So it needs to be pagan, but Saturnalia will suffice. It's pretty pagan as it is Roman. Roman pagan Saturn and all that. And it's about eating and being bawdy, but we eat.
The eating part's good.
Yeah.
Anything that involves eating makes me happy.
Yeah, I cook the whole thing. But anyway, so you got to move here?
Given half the opportunity, I would. But for now, I would just make frequent trips over.
Okay. How often is that? How often do you get here?
Probably 6 months a year.
Oh. Okay. So you mean twice a year? Or once a year you stay for 6 months?
I tend to break it up. I tend to have a few other things going on across the world. So there's a lot of traveling. There's also a lot of going back to
That's
Malaysia.
That's cryptic.
Going back to Malaysia so my mom doesn't think I'm dead.
Okay, that's a good thing.
Yes.
Yes.
It's really gotten to a point where she's tracking my social media, and if I don't tweet for a day, she starts panicking and tries contacting my friends.
Oh, yeah. If you if you have a Google phone, she can track you all too well.
I will avoid ever buying a Google phone in that case.
No, no. you have to opt into it. Fair. And both people have to say yes for that to work. What's really great, though, is you can do it for just an hour.
Interesting.
It's very useful if you're meeting somebody someplace. Mm-hmm. What kind of work do you do besides professional writing?
Previously, I was a business developer for a small micro publisher from Singapore. I currently do social media management work for a Melbourne company. And I don't know, So, this is technically a company secret. But they didn't say it had to be a state secret. It just didn't need to be very public. Is this very public?
So, this is very public, yes.
I am starting work next week with a game writing company. And I'm very excited because... Video game company. And I'm very excited because some of the staff include people that I've worshipped since I was a child. Like, the games that I created completely flipped my world. They introduced the idea of speculative fiction. Prior to that, I believed that fantasy had a certain format, science fiction had a certain format. Then I played their game and they were like, nope.
You know, I could not believe it, but the Nebula Award, Science Fiction Writers of America, which only has four major categories, which is just length of story. Then they have a screenwriting award, and then they have a YA, Young Adult Award, have now included Writing Gaming Award.
I'm very excited for that.
That's really
threw
me back. That's where I finally found a generational, like, what? Really?
Yes, don't do that.
Well, understand, number one, that I do play the games. Mm-hmm. It's not like I'm a ginnam.
I didn't say you were.
No, but I'm just explaining that. But because I don't quite see how that... I mean, they don't have a poetry award, like the Riesling Award or something. There is a Riesling Award for the Poet of the Spaceways from Heinlein. But obviously they don't mean coding. You know, it's not programming, it's story. I assume. Now, I know that Naomi Novik, before she became the author of all the Temeraire books and everything else, wrote the game Neverwinter Nights 2.
I never knew that.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
Holy God.
It's a darn good game, too. It really is. I like the immersive RPGs where, you know, where you can play for like 150 hours and then do it again as another character.
Interestingly enough, that is the specialization of the company I will be working
far
with.
Out. Yes, I have.
I have to tell people about that.
I have history with that. On this show, in the day, I had most of the authors of the Infocom games.
Oh, wow. Even the people who did Zork?
Mark Blank, yes. And Dave... The guy who really developed it into something else. And he tore into me when, oh, what's the character that will eat you if you're in the dark for three turns? And I asked him, where did that come from? Where did that character come from? And he just looked at me. And you could see that look over the radio. And he looked at me and said, that's from Jack Vance. And it's like, oops, yeah, okay, yes, I should have known that. Yes. It's not a Vatch, that's something else. But yes, I had the folks from Zork. I had, well, pretty much most of the Infocom folk on
there. Very impressive.
Because they thought I was a good interviewer.
You really are, sir.
Thank you. And I got people over mic fright. So they figured they'd start them off with my show so they could then tour and talk about their games. And that included the game writer, Douglas Adams.
You interviewed Douglas Adams?
I did more than that. The first time, okay, I'll keep it brief. Listeners have heard this 1,000 times. The first time Douglas was on the show, he had called our station manager. This is in about 1978. Mm-hmm. And he said, "Oh, you got this guy here. He works on a TV show called Doctor Who. He's a script writer. He's the script editor of this show, Doctor Who." I said, "Douglas Adams?" He said, "Yeah, that's right." "Really?" He said, "Yeah. You want to, it's sci-fi, so you're going to interview him." Not a question, a statement. That's how this station manager was. So I meet up with Douglas. WBAI used to broadcast the BBC shows like The Goon Show and things like that. And so we had BBC transcription players. This is like a record player, except the discs were 14 inches. So they were proprietary. And Douglas comes on and he said, "Oh, yes, well, I won't do the accent." That he had we can talk about Doctor Who, but I wanted to talk about this radio drama series that I just finished called The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy.
Oh, my gosh.
And it's like, yes, let us speak of this. And he was on the show, for 2 hours. And we talked about this new radio drama. And he said, "Yeah, of course it requires a BBC transcription player. Otherwise, it would be useless." And when he left, somehow he accidentally left 6 BBC transcription discs.
Oh, gosh.
And, yeah, we had a player. So the following week, and I was on the air 5 days a week in those days, episodes 1 and 2, and 3 and 4, and then on the Wednesday, 5 and 6. So I'm the first person in the U.S., in this continent, to have broadcast The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy.
Oh, my gosh.
And it was pirated. It was outright illegal, and I couldn't ever tell that story except, horribly, at age 49, Douglas died. And if the BBC wants to go after him, they're welcome to try. Hire Dirk Gently to get at him or something, people. So, yeah, so that's how my history with Douglas started. And I claim, somebody put on Wikipedia that it was actually Mike Hodel at our sister station at KPFK who, I didn't silence my phone, darn it. What's it? At KPFK, who first, why am I getting a reminder that I'm supposed to be on the air an hour ago? that he did it. And the fact of the matter is that Douglas came here first and then flew to L.A. and 2 days later pulled the same number at our sister station with Mike Hodel, who in fact was on Hour of the Wolf. On Mondays with Margot Adler, every so often. He was our news director, then went to the West Coast to be our sister station's news director. And fans of his, and he has a lot, deservedly so, say that he broadcast it first. And no, by 2 days, no. Douglas went to both places, but I'm not going to rain on their parade. He was a wonderful guy. I'm not going to go there and claim spitting rights to, no, Mike didn't do that.
You're a good man, Jim.
He was a good man.
Sorry.
He was a great reader, and he did great science fiction programming. But I did it first. Only because that was the order in which Mike and which Douglas went. But yeah, we got to do that.
Awesome.
Yeah. And Douglas was really cool. I liked him a lot. It was like meeting a member of Monty Python.
Oh, gosh.
Where they all went to school together, as did Terry Pratchett. They were all this one clique.
I like to imagine that in 20 years I'll have similar stories about my peers who have just become superstars.
In 20 years I'll be telling people how I met Cassandra Cole.
Aw, Jim. Sweetheart.
Aw. So, in awe of Caw, no. Cassandra Caw is not the name with which you were born, is it?
No.
It is?
No, it isn't.
No, so what is your name?
Oh, my real name is Zoe Caw Jue.
Zoe Caw Jue.
Correct.
And you took on the pseudonym just because it was easier to market? Or is there a reason?
Oh, it was less marketing reason. For some very strange reason, people in Malaysia had no concept of how to pronounce Zoe. It
really?
Has been pronounced as Zou, Ziu, Zhao, and once zucchini.
Uh-huh.
So when Cassandra...
That was food-related, at least.
Yes, but zucchini is a terrible vegetable, so...
Oh!
Sorry.
No, you sauté it with some onion and tomato.
No. Well, I can't
say And then
that.
You bake it. It's like ratatouille without the mouse.
But a mouse is the best part.
It is. It really is. And Patton Oswalt doing the voice. But that all that aside...
But Cassandra became my pseudonym of choice.
Okay. Does it have doesn't have anything to do with writing dark fiction?
No, but it did have a lot to do with the fact that no one would listen to me, and I found a certain poetic amusement in having, you know, Cassandra as a name.
Hmm.
And if I'm not mistaken, Cassandra also translates to protector of men. So, in my emo adolescence, I decided. There was multiple meanings.
I didn't realize that, but it makes sense given her legend.
Yes.
Doesn't it?
It does, doesn't it?
Yeah, yeah, because she was the harbinger. She was the
Correct.
One who said, you know, be careful, doom will befall.
Doom.
And it wasn't just because she wanted the doom, she was protecting mm-hmm. people, or at least attempting to, despite their own...
Correct.
...foibles. So, yeah, it's...
Story
it's...
of my life.
So, and then you just started submitting and everything started being bought?
I submitted my first story. It was terrible. Somebody told me that it was a preachy sort of story. Then I stopped doing those and I sold the second story that I put out, Disconnect, to Terraform, I believe. Then it was Lacking Duns and it kind of steamrolled from there.
That's pretty amazing. Are you aware of that? Are you aware of just how amazing it is to have sold this many stories in that amount of time? And they're good.
Thank you. Somebody told me I wasn't selling enough stories. There was no reason for my 24 this year. Hello, you know who you are if you're listening in.
Okay. And if you're listening in and you know who you are, I don't know who you are, but whap, whap, whap. you've just been air slapped. I slapped you over the radio. It's appropriate. You're not selling enough stories, Jesus.
I know, right?
Yeah. I mean, there are probably people who sell as many or more stories, mm-hmm. and those stories suck.
Oh, Jesus. Harsh.
No. Accurate. Well, okay, you know, sometimes 'tis better to be cruel mm-hmm. in order to be kind. I'm misquoting,
Fair enough, sir.
But there you go.
Fair enough, sir.
Yeah, so what other cool questions or whatever should I spend? Or
sky's the limit.
Okay, how high the sky? At any rate, yeah, it's the traveling thing that keeps boggling my mind. But very cool about the video game company. So these will be games marketed for the PC and...
For the PC, for the PS4.
Yeah.
It's a very well-known indie company. They've produced some very big hits.
Can you say what the company is? If you'd rather not, don't.
I cannot.
Okay, fine.
Not yet. Not till
no
next
problem.
Week.
Okay, you'll call in next week.
And just squeak the
When name. Our guest, I think, will be Sam J. Miller, but I'm not sure.
He's lovely.
He is, but he has to get back here instead of traveling.
He's in Venice right now, isn't he?
Yeah, yeah.
Lucky.
He travels all the bleeping time. He's worse than Ellen Kushner and Delia Sherman and these people, they're globetrotters.
Guilty.
Yes, guilty, guilty, guilty. I go from Brooklyn occasionally to Manhattan. Yeah, that's about it for me. I was once in England. That's it. For 10 days. It was good. It was very cool. Mm. I loved London. Mm.
place to visit.
I got to see a lot of great theater.
Yes.
It's like New York.
Except shorter.
In that, well, yeah, but it's like New York that every time you see a street or a building or something, you can relate it to something in fiction mm-hmm. or in culture.
That is very true.
You can say, oh, my God, you know, there's, you know, the gardens where Peter Pan fell out of his pram and got picked up by the fairies in Kensington Park, you know, and that kind of stuff. So it was, New York's a similar kind of a place where...
There's a lot of history and fiction related to all of it.
Yeah, in both cities, London mm-hmm. and New York. So I had a very good time there, and I saw a lot of great theater. So
London's very good for that.
Yeah, yeah, and I like theater. Can't afford it. But I do like it. So, yeah, I want to know more about those RPGs, which are role-playing games, computer role-playing games people. there are people out there and say, you do fantasy radio and role-playing games? You've got the wrong idea. Tune out. Go look at pictures. That's what I say to those folks.
He's staring at me very...
I'm thinking. I'm thinking, okay, it's 2 a.m. over WBAI in New York City. And I'm thinking, do we want to play a cut of music and sure. then have a short story? I didn't log in to where I mostly get music from. Do you have any preferences? I have very few things here. But I can log in and get more.
Well, I think I'm doing a science fiction thing after this, so that is my only preference, something that adds to that.
Okay, yeah, I've got skiffy songs. You want a comedy robot or a bona fide end of the world?
End of the world.
End of the world, okay, yeah. Well,
it is the end of the world.
Well, as we know it.
Correct.
With an earthquake, birds and snakes, an airplane, Lenny Bruce is not afraid. I have a hurricane, listen to yourself, turn world, serve its own needs, dummy, serve your own needs, beat it up, a knock, speak, grunt, no strength, the ladder starts to clatter with fear, fight down, high, wire and a fire, representing seven games in a government for hire and a combat site. Left to west are coming in a hurry with the furies breathing down your neck. Team my team, reporters, babble, Trump, tether, crop, look at that. Slice and burn, return, listen to yourself churn. Locking in, uniform and book burning, blood letting, every motive escalate, automotive centering. Light a candle, light a motor, step down, watch a heel crush, crush, uh-oh. This means no fear, cavalier, renegade, steer clear, a tournament of lies. Offer me solutions, offer me alternatives, and I decline. It's the end of the world as we know it. It's the end of the world.
Patriotic slam button, that's right. It's the end of the world as we know it. It's the end of the world as we know it. it's the end of the world as we know it. It's the end of the world as we know it. And I feel fine.
E.M. Here, over listener-sponsored non-commercial Pacifica. Now, I need to do a long... I used to be able to just do that, but now at my doddering age, I need to take a long breath before I say... You tune to listener-sponsored non-commercial Pacifica Radio, New York City, WBAI, vibrating 99.5 million times every second. The name of the program is Hour of the Wolf. The name of the host is Jim Freund. The name of the guest is Cassandra Kaw. Look for her by name, K-H-A-W, Cassandra, is the first part of that. So tell us what you have on your tiny little phone there. Whoops.
First of all, my phone isn't all that tiny. It's a normal size. It's just a phone size.
It is a proper phone size, yes.
Just oversized.
Mine is oversized. About that. Speaking of which, do you mind if I take photos of you?
Go ahead.
Okay. People can see Cassandra, by the way, from... Yeah, you do that, don't you? You purse your lips. Okay, we need a bit of a close-up for that. I haven't figured out this phone totally.
I'm just making funny faces at Jim right now.
No, people will see them online and Instagram and things like that. Okay. Got them.
All right. So the story I'm going to share is something that was published in Clark's World, I think in 2016. It is one of my more experimental stories. It is a second-person story. And listeners at home, I have one request for you. Whenever I say,
I will need to say something before you continue.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Just before you start the story.
Listeners at home, I only have one request to ask of you. When I say the word brief, take a long breath.
Okay, very good. And speaking of words, let me let listeners note that this... the following section of this program contains frank language, and if you are offended by frank language, best to tune out and rejoin us in about half an hour. Okay.
All right. Perfect.
So, you know what? Give me like 30 seconds. I am going to try, if I can do this, to see if I can add this onto
Facebook Live?
Yeah, onto Facebook Live.
No pressure.
Is right. No, there's no pressure. This is a much smaller audience than the one you had last week, which so far has had a little over 1,000 views.
Nice.
Yeah. I'm very pleased with how we're starting to get a little traction on the reading series. But, you know, geez, what a lousy interface, Facebook. I gotta say, you know, it's like, what are you... I'm listing nothing. There's... Okay. My screen has just gone blank. I hope all of you listening at home can see that. Oh, no, it wants me to watch. I don't want to watch. I want to broadcast. Okay, if I do this... Ah! No selfies. I forbid selfies. There. Ah, there's Cassandra. Now, because I'd like to get it from the beginning of the story. That's why I'm stalling. Is there... Oh, wait. There's something that says live? I do believe. No, no, no. God's got too many questions. Okay, forget it, folks. Sorry. We're not doing Facebook Live now.
Oh, no.
No, hey, we're broadcasting to more people than do Facebook Live, so that's just fine, and we'll do very nice Instagram pictures of you in the meantime.
Sounds good.
It is good. So you may proceed.
Breathe. The water is cold. Breathe. Lightless, the ocean is without dimension, only a blackness unyielding. There is no sound, no movement. Nothing but a percussion of ventricles in labor and the frayed rafts of your breath as you suck in stale, processed air. Breathe. Ah. There. You see it in the distance, a speckling of iridescence, indigo and motes of searing cyan, adrift on hoarfrost filaments no bigger than the width of a hair. Noctiluca Janus, the only color in this alien world, and somehow, the only life. The theory of its biology is faultless, unicellular simplicity, self-devouring, self-sustaining, both predator and prey, alternatively cryptobiotic and savagely proliferative, a perfect answer to an imperfect world. But it is bizarre to you that nothing else exists in tandem. Not even a divergent subspecies, differentiated by a single genome. Nothing but this gas of cold light in the endless dark. Breathe. Like floating in God's womb, Lisa had joked. The others laughed, and you laughed with them, nervous, unwilling to admit to miscalculated bravado 10,000 light-years from viable resolution, the truth is, you're terrified. No matter how hard you try, you cannot participate in the communion of your crewmates' rapture, cannot decipher their willingness to plunge into the abyss over and over, spinning like children unburdened by parents or atheists tethered by scripture, breathe. The water is black, cold, eternal. Breathe. You glide fingertips over the equipment on your belt, enumerating them by touch. Flashlight, flare gun, nitrox and analyzer, knives, shrope. Their presence is a benediction. The solidity of the rosary breeds. You're abandoned with religion. You breathe. You shudder. You press a button on your comm unit. Hear the rustle static. It takes only a minute before the noise resolves into your communication officer's clear, deep voice. You remember joking with him over tasteless mugs of warm, rehydrated soup, that he'd miss his calling as a radio host. You remember other things, too. The way his laugh hummed against your skin. The texture of his fingertips on the juncture between your waist and hip. You push those memories down. This is Poseidon. What is your status? Persephone 035573. The numbers roll easily from your tongue. You won't admit it to anyone, especially not after your lecture on the commercialization of Grecian myth, but you've developed a fondness for your call sign. Persephone, Hades' grudging spouse, doomed to darkness by momentary weakness. Just like you. Noctiluca Janus appears to have initiated its breeding cycle. Everything looks on track. If current conditions hold, I estimate we'll be able to begin harvest in 6 hours. 6 hours? An incredulous noise. That thing moves fast. Yeah. Consider a lie, but dismiss it with the next breath. Bubbles knife through the water, obscuring your vision. And briefly, you're wrecked by a terror almost biblical in stature. You clench pelvic muscles. Try not to piss your suit. Breathe. When can I get out of here? Soon. Breathe. How soon is soon? 2 minutes? 3 hours? 16 days? How long before I can get the fuck out of here? The words thump hot against your throat, your skull, the basin of your eye sockets. Every syllable invokes another spasm of localized anguish, the pinpoint magnesium white sparking of a migraine. Your throat swells with panic. Breathe. Soon, okay? I promise. We'll get you out of there before you know it. Just think about fuzzy blankets and hot cocoa. Talk to me. Come on. What's the first thing you want to do when you get out of there? He says. His voice is warm and rich. Maple smoke in summer nights. You wish you could spoon it into a jar, keep it on a table beside your bed, so you can dole it out across a lifetime of 3 a.m. terrors, of waking up and realizing you're alone. A hot shower. Your laugh cracks, and your voice is thick and caked with dread, but it doesn't matter. He swaddles you in the rolling cadence of his answering laugh, forest scent, the muffled sweetness of your father's old radio, an effortless thing that almost convinces you that everything will be okay. Breathe. Really? You think that you'll be tired of being wet already, but I promise, soon, he says for the third time, and you're not sure if it is the mythic quality prescribed to the number 3, or the fact you two share the moment that does it, but something loosens in your breath, and you breathe. I don't understand why I need to be out here. Because humans have something called instinct. It's far easier to have a severe present than to pick out true, 1,000 pages of cold, dry facts. You hear the crinkle of plastic rim and rhythmic chewing, teeth-pulping, chocolate-lined biscuits. It's a ludicrous noise, so domestic and out of place that you laugh. A bark of sound that cuts itself short on the knife of your desperate delight. What's so funny? He asks. And you hear the weight of a pout caught in the lower octaves. Nothing. Your attention diverts to the Noctiluca Janus. It's denser now. No longer improbably ethereal, but nebula spiraling outwards. Tendrils of variegated cyan outstretched in silent supplication. It's just, should you be eating that? I know it's not the best lunch. No, you laugh. And this time, it is strong and clear and real. God, you're the absolute worst. Breathe. It staggers you as to how easily you invoke his name. How easily it slips from your throat like the voice of a frightened child, naive and needful. Conscious that no one is listening, but unable to resist the impulse to reach out. You might not be able to will a hope into existence, but if you believe hard enough, perhaps you can keep it suspended between being and not being. Schrondiger's deity, you think, mouth clumping into a smile. Am not, he retorts, petulant voice, muffled, and you laugh out loud again. For the gap of a heartbeat, the water is not as cold as you recall, not as terrible. You breathe. R2, am not. You hear a gulp, a sigh of pleasure, the noise of a table being resequenced for function, porcelain and plastic sliding over metal, paper being crumpled, the creak of an aging desk chair. You know, I could probably do this all day. Breathe. Cannot. Can't do. How does it look? every beautiful. Reverence chokes your lungs. It leaves no room for dread, no space for misgivings. There is only awe, cold and sharp. An austere worship like the cathedrals of your childhood. But where those were stone, Noctilica Janus is life ever effervescent, enormous, everywhere. You scoop fingers through the teeming light, and the algae pulses brighter. Rivulets of turquoise and ultramarine. You close a fist. The strands separate into motes, into starburst. Phantasmagoric shapes like a hallucination of heaven. It is the most incredible thing you've seen. It is the most terrible. Cultivable state? You pause, riveted by the incandescence, transfixed by a single sobering thought. What would happen if this gets loose? You picture the waters of earth, the lakes and the tributaries, the streams and the seas, swelling with the luminous Icarus. Midway, your imagination mutates, and the rivers become arteries, become veins like blue-green fronds. You can see it so clearly. The Noctilica Janus carousing refrain plates, shading the teal in currents of plasma, growing, 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 until it infiltrates every tissue, invests every tendon, invades every delicate pustulant, alveoli, breathe. Persephone 035573, breathe. Persephone 035573, report, breathe. Alice! The sound of your name towers you back into awareness. Around you, the algae crowds closer, burns brighter. Your eyes water from their brilliance. And it's all you can do not to scream. Alice, are you there? Breathe. Inhale. Exhale. You count the seconds between each action, lengthen the interval, slow the wheezing palpitation of your lungs. Inhale. Exhale. Yes. What happened? Nothing. Nothing at all. Your voice quivers through the lie, but he does not call you out. Instead, he grunts affirmation, falls silent. And then a telomere of music drips through the comlink, too soft at first to decipher. But slowly it clarifies into saxophone and bass guitar, the rhythmic thump of heel on wood, an old bluesman's smoke scratch voice. He's singing about the deal he made with the devil, and can't help but think you've walked the same mile too, Langa cut. Okay. He cups the word in his mouth for a second before he lets go. Well, if it's any consolation, we're about to ready to start rolling out a welcome mat. You've done your time. You can come home now. Home. The word is an ache in your ribs. It's a hurt like a tumor wedged between your bones or the arms of someone who is no longer your own. The submersible is not home. The ship isn't home. None of it is home in the way you know home to be. But you don't argue. You've embarrassed yourself enough already. Instead, you grope for the line that tethers you to your drone, and you pull yourself along, fist over fist, a newborn retracing its pilgrimage from the womb. Relief boils as you make contact with the steel, and you're on the verge of popping open the hatch when you turn, clumsy in the skin of your suit, flesh prickling with unease. One last look around, one last check. You're not sure what it is, but something tugs like a hook in your lip. You scan the myriad of dazzling scintillant blues, search it for clues. The algae has grown astronomically in the last few hours, seething and churning, mobilized by the ocean current. Where once there was only blackness, now there is only light. Wait. Your eyes adjust. you begin to pick out anomalies in the effulgent topology, fibrous tissue, incongruent with your knowledge of the Noctiluca genus. Slowly, too slowly, you assemble an epiphany of the dangling synodonts, the clusters of ganglia, almost invisible against that backdrop of searing cyan. Brief, you were wrong, you were all wrong. There was another life here. There had always been another life, a predatory counterpart, nameless but no less dangerous for its anonymity. You arrive at this realization just as the communication channels are flung open and the shrill hysteria of the crew blares through the frequency. In horror, you watch as Medusae gather like a funeral cowl over the submersible, clotting engines and vents, a frenzy of glowing Defana's bodies. Breathe. The world compresses into individual heartbeats. Between every contraction, you make an inventory of its circumstances, of possible escape routes and its survival plans. You turn them over and over, dissect them, splay them, empty them in pursuit of a solution, but nothing satisfies. Your pulse roaring in your ears, you arrive again at the truth you'd known from the start. None of you will survive this. Breathe. Alice, are you there? Tio, you scream back. What is going on there? Fuck me. A raw-throated shriek of rage. No, more a bellow. A foghorn challenge, still deep and percussive despite the madness. Metal screeches. Glass breaks. In the distance, the ship judders and convulses, fighting to disentangle from the creatures that are bearing it down, down, down into the black. Pseudopod searching. Fuck, get the fuck off me. Fucking hell. You, Alice, are you still listening? Yes, we're dead here. His voice. Tin to a knife point shakes. The ship's going down, but I think I can get you something out of supplies. It should be enough. God, you might need to eat your leg or something, but it's a shot. No, you're not. You're going to let those things in. So, at least we're all, there's no. Another crash, another scream. Point in trying to prolong the inevitable. We're dead. No. The word repeats, no, not after all these weeks of adjustment, these nights of flensing the desire from your affection, of learning to make holy a love that was once written in bare skin and salt kiss heat and the tickle of his stubble against the cool of your skin. No. He's shouting at you now, firing trajectories, demanding calibration, intent on making you listen, but you refuse. There's only a 16% chance anyway of you surviving long enough for rescue to matter. You're all going to die. Breathe. You gulp air in quick, ragged bursts. But it doesn't seem to be enough. Nothing seems to be enough. Desperate, you run your gaze over your drone, over the noose of tools around your waist. Not enough. There's not enough time to think, to feel, to plan. Not enough. Nerveless, your fingers spasm close over the flare gun. I have an idea. You have no idea if it will work. Theories like this are developed over months of meticulous research, of interpretation, and cross-checking and fact-checking, of scientific journals and peer review. But there is no time for anything but impulse and isting, and does it matter anyway? Tell the crew to kill everything they can. The engines, the light, breathing machines, or whatever. Power down as far as you can go. This is fucking insane. What the fuck? They're drawn by heat, right? Or light. They have to be. That's the only way they could identify the Janus in the dark. Inhale. Exhale. Inhale. Exhale. Try to not think about what you're doing, what it means. If you linger too long on the ramifications of your endeavor, self-preservation will kick in, so you don't. You breathe instead. Inhale, exhale, inhale, exhale. I'm going to make an explosion. Hopefully, there'll be enough time for them to drift away. You'll be able to get out. You're kidding me. No, I haven't been more serious about anything else in my life. You can't. I love you. The words start free before you can stem their escape. and you can't tell if that sound that follows is a laugh or a sob. Only that wrenches at your core like it'll turn you inside out. I love you so much, and I wish everything that happened had not happened. You better fucking survive this and get out of here and have kids and grow old and Alice, and you better name this other shit after me and Alice, and I love you. I love you, I love you, I love you, and oh God, it feels so good to say that. I love you. I love you. Breathe. Goodbye. The world erupts into chemical fire. Breathe. Everything burns. Every sensory receptor, every atom of your being, every cell is alive with pain. You feel amorphous, formless, bereft of shape. There is no you that is not also agony, also the crisping of your skin, the cooking of your muscle. You are anguish. You burn. Breathe. Sam, you can't. You splutter and gasp, but there is no air to consume. Nothing but the water that floods your lungs, salt taste on your nose, and on your tongue you choke. Breathe. You hold that last imperative like a prayer. Your heart strains, sings it with every desperate contraction. Already you can feel consciousness ebbing, your oxygen-starved brain writing haphazard pains to a life adequately spent, neurons misfiring, recalling memories out of chronological order. A light grows, striated by humanite silhouettes. What is that? You begin to think. Only to stop yourself. No, no time for that. Focus on breathing. Inhale, exhale. Inhale, exhale. Focus on staying alive. Breathe. The blackness closes in. And for a moment, you think you feel a pressure around your wrists, arms around your body. And a voice that is not telling, not your own, telling you to breathe, breathe, breathe.
You've been listening to Breathe, read for you by the author, Cassandra Caw. These are the Eagles, Journey of the Sorcerer. Thank you. It's not the same recording as that was used in The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, but it's the same composition by the same people in a longer version from the album One of These Nights. But they never give credit in Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy for this being the music. I'm very surprised. So much for the BBC. We'll leave it on in the background. So again, that was a lovely story. It sounds almost as if you wrote it for the ear.
Does it?
It does, to me. Yeah, pull the mic. You can just lift it and put it in a place that's more comfortable for you, if you like.
Hopefully I won't drop it.
Oh, that much better, yeah. So, but that's the way I hear things, see things very often, mm-hmm. especially when I'm listening to them read for me or coming through an audiobook or a podcast or something. But I was always that way. I'd read certain stories and I'd hear them as I was reading them. Mm. And the story is written in what tense is that?
I think it's second person.
Yeah, second person blank.
Second-person present tense?
Yes. Yay. Yes, that's it. Second-person present tense. I am talking to you. You do this. You do that. Mm-hmm. It's experiential. Mm-hmm. It's of the moment. And to me, yeah, that's like it makes great audio. It makes great.
Aw, thank you.
Put, close your eyes, put on them headphones, and experience this thing. And yes, breathe.
Kate does a better job of it than Clark's World.
Oh, Kate does it.
She does, but she's a professional.
Kate is fabulous. Kate
Love
is
you, Kate.
Wonderful. Kate. Oh, the one who does the evil competition to Lightspeed magazine that I work on? Kate is wonderful. Kate Baker is a brilliant reader and a wonderful human being. And Kate, if you get to hear about this, remember, I want your daughters. I want them to do movie reviews.
Don't worry, it's not the other thing.
Because when Kate was last on this show, she brought her children with her. And Matt Smith had just left Doctor Who, and Peter Capaldi was coming in. And her kids and I got into this whole thing about, you know, which doctor, which generation, and how much they liked Peter Capaldi, even though he's old, and, you know, but to them, Matt Smith was old. Mm-hmm. And just listening to the conversation, and Kate and I were looking at each other and saying, let's just put them on the air, you know, because I loved that thing, and at that moment it was born, and Kate has a studio. She does Clark's World. Right. Yes. Yeah. She can just put her kids in the studio, send me the raw recording. I'll take it from there. I want your children, Kate.
Not for the thing radio. Most people can say on radio without getting arrested for.
Yeah. This is true. Mm-hmm. And I mean this in the best possible way. I want them as radio professionals. And that's it. You know, that I don't need to see them. They can stay in their own home. I think that she's got a little thing under the stairs, sort of like a Harry Potter kind of.
I really
of.
Hope that's not where she leaves the kids. That sounds terrible.
No, it's where she records the podcast.
Okay, that's a lot better.
Yes. Yes, no, that's where she puts herself while the kids get to roam around the house.
Much better.
Stamping. You know, it's like, Mom's trying to record. I'm imagining all of this.
And Kate's sitting there somewhere.
Yeah, and Kate, we have to have you back on the air, although I think she and I are doing a panel together at Capclave, as a matter of fact, about podcasts and stuff like that. Yeah! Yeah. No, she's great. She did. I can imagine the job she did with that, because she can be very seductive with that voice. I'm going to have to listen to that now. And you listeners can do that by going to clarksworld.com and going through any number of their fine, fine stories. And if you want more Cassandra Caw stories read to you, we're going to have, I think, one on Nightmare and one in Lightspeed?
Correct.
Yeah, okay. And I trust those will be chosen. You see, what happens is there's two stories a week in the publication, and one of those two stories are chosen for podcast.
Oh, gosh. I'm glad I have at least one on that list.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I believe you. Which one is that?
Don't Turn on the Lights.
Ooh, okay. Yes, I actually saw that.
I'm excited.
I have access.
Well, obviously.
So, I'm the audio editor.
I mean, you need to have
access. I'm also the host.
Well, again, you need to have access if you're going to be those things.
Well, but I'm not doing the reading.
True.
We have actors, people like Gabrielle DeCure and Stefan Rudnicki and Claire Bloom and Wilfred Hyde, well, not Wilfred Hyde White, his son, Alex Hyde White.
Cue applause.
Alex, yeah, well, yeah, absolutely. Alex Hyde White is cool. Wilfred Hyde White, one of my favorite actors in British world trivia. He was in My Fair Lady. He plays Pickering. And his son played the young Sean Connery in Indiana Jones.
Huh.
He plays Indy's father when Indy's father was young. He's done a lot of other work as well.
I see.
One time I got to call him up. I was expecting this proper, you know, very first story I edited of of Alex Hyde White was, you know, when we're going on expedition and stuff like that. And, you know, all this bluster and stuff like this. And I needed to know about a certain word. So I called the phone number. Somebody answers the phone and goes, yeah. I'm going, hi, is Alex Hyde White there? Yep, you got him. I'm thinking, of course, his father worked in Hollywood. He was born in California. This is just another dialect that he has mastered. Mm-hmm. It's fun working with actors, usually. I also worked at a talent agency.
Oh, dear.
I was a residuals clerk. So I got to meet, I was everybody's favorite because I wrote them their check. So, it's true. I worked.
Everyone likes the guy who gives them money.
Oh, yes. And takes out 10%, may I?
Still.
It's part of the whole gig there. But I looked out for them. I would see, ooh. That voiceover commercial played for the fourth time this week, and they got paid twice.
Oh.
We actually all had to do that. We had to keep our eyes open. People were constantly getting ripped off.
Oh.
So, which issue of Clark's World was that in?
I don't remember.
It was 2016.
Yes, it was a 2016 story.
Yeah, yeah. You got more stuff coming up with Neil?
No, I haven't submitted anything with them recently, but
I'm sure anything you submit.
Sean's been poking me about it.
Yeah, well. Yeah.
But mostly, I think I have stories coming out with Lightspeed. I've lost track of who I've sold stories to. I have more stories coming out with Beneath Ceaseless Skies. I have an
Scott
Apex.
Andrews?
Yes. I have an Apex story. I can't think of any more at the moment, but forgive me, listeners. It is quite late in New York right now.
Yeah, it's 2:45. It's quite early.
Touché, sir.
Yeah. But yes, and Beneath Ceaseless Skies is going to have its 10th anniversary. I had mentioned that in 1 year, and we will be hosting them.
Nice.
Yeah, so I'll have Scott Andrews on this show, and we will have a bunch of their writers at the New York Review of Science Fiction Readings to kick off our next season.
Mm-hmm.
And I've done similar things with... and I've got one coming up with Neil Clark.
Mm-hmm.
I've got one coming up with Gordon Van Gilder.
Nice.
Who has a new anthology starting up. And he founded the New York Review of Science Fiction Readings. So sort of like a return. And we have... We have a very, very cool thing, which is secret. Should be very, very quiet, but it's going to be very, very cool.
I'm excited already.
Yeah, you will be. And it's about a magazine.
Ooh.
And it's about a magazine that you should be submitting to.
That I haven't already submitted to?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah, yeah. So we'll be cryptic about that. On the air. off the air, you can't shut me up. On the air, you can't shut me up. So you should do some talking. So where does a story like that really come from? The depths. And also, why is it that people write horror and the darkest fiction are always the nicest people?
Do you think I'm nice, really?
Okay, everybody listening at home, do you see the look on my face?
He looks like a very happy Santa Claus right now, just so you all know.
Oh, yeah, the beard, yeah. Mm-hmm. And the gray.
And just the light that...
And
rosy cheeks.
Yeah. And you know what that is?
Yes.
It's roseate nose, they call it.
Huh?
Oh. Oh, yeah. I have to take a cream for it, and then it won't be rosy anymore.
Oh.
But... Ran out of cream. It's horrible.
I take it back then.
No, actually, it's gotten to a point where it's not too bad, but sorry, folks, you're not getting selfies out of me.
But to answer your question, so I've had complex PTSD, I think, for as long as I recall, and part of that involves having very vivid nightmares.
Ooh.
My memory is, I'm told, reasonably unique in that I recall visual, audio, tastes, sounds, even specific thoughts. So
the Oliver Sacks kind of...
I suppose?
Yeah, Oliver Sacks, you know, was a physiologist, mm-hmm. and all that. He wrote the book The Man Who Mistook His Wife for a Hat. and there's a movie, a fictional movie about him called Awakening, mm-hmm. starring... Robin Williams playing him, and he diagnosed people who tasted color, and things like that, where the brain was doing interesting interpretations of objects.
That is very similar, I think, to what I experienced. Brief came out of this fading memory of a nightmare, like it was almost a taste at the back of my tongue and it wouldn't go away until I'd written it out.
Wow.
So it's kind of like a vivid hallucination that will not leave you alone until it's been trapped in words.
Hmm. Hmm. And does that in fact work? Is it then expelled?
Yes. Then it goes away.
Wow.
Otherwise I'm haunted by deep undersea visions for pretty much an indefinite amount of time.
How good for us and how horrible for you.
I've gotten used to it. It's fine, I think.
Really?
Sort of.
Uh-huh. That's really, to have nightmares like that quite so vivid. And,
I've monetized them.
And persistent. That they persist with you mm-hmm. long after. I sometimes actually try to hold on to certain dreams, even nightmares.
Mm-hmm.
And it's so difficult. And by the time I have articulated to myself what it was about, lying in bed, waking up, I've changed the story.
Mm-hmm.
But that can be all right, too, changing the story into one.
Of course.
That I know. My nightmare is that I'm doing a show and Lister doesn't show up. But I hear his feet coming down the hall. It's been weeks. No, he doesn't stomp. He glides in. He doesn't walk. He floats on feet of Rastafarian clouds. Good morning, Lister.
Good morning. Bonjour.
How is your swim?
Wonderful in the nude.
Yeah, he goes. He and his wife go nude swimming in North Carolina? Really?
Ocracoke Island. I didn't get arrested this time.
You didn't get arrested this time. And you missed
Secrets
the hurricanes. Yeah, you didn't go swimming with Irma. Okay, that's a good thing. Going. Why don't you put on... Oh, you are putting on your headphones.
I am, indeed.
All righty. In that case, I will have to say the magic words of good morning. You are on the air.
Good morning.
Hello.
Is this Cassandra and James?
This is Cassandra Kaw.
And James, yes.
Yeah, well, and James.
You know, James has this lovely habit and I call it a habit, but it's lovely, of tying the right pieces of music to a story. I couldn't think of a better piece of music than Journey of the Sorcerer. That melody, the first time I heard it, I can't tell you how many years ago, it just runs around the back of my mind.
You probably first heard it in 1977.
Probably. But that clawhammer banjo with that orchestra, and I love things in a minor key. Anyway,
and the fact that it's the Eagles, that's what's so weird about it.
It is, and it's not, I don't even know how to put it. You can't pigeonhole. Cassandra, I must tell you something. James has had some interesting people from fascinating places, but you top the cake.
This is a guy who loves culture.
Oh, no, 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 yeah.
And you are teeming with culture.
Oh, God.
Overflowing.
I have to tell you, Malaysia, a place that when I think of that name, I'm great with maps. And I think of names, when you mention Malaysia, I think of names like Sarawak, like Brunei, like Sabah, like islands that Dutch ships and traders visited in the 19th and early 20th century.
In order to enslave people, yeah.
And I have to ask you, Cassandra, because I always ask this question. When you were growing up, did your elders, parents, uncles, aunts ever instill into you Malaysian folk culture? Were you ever told Malaysian fairy tales?
That's a great question.
Animal tales? Or trickster stories of, say, a character like Conchil the Mouse Deer?
Yes, absolutely. Growing up
in Malaysia. Oh, you heard Conchil stories?
Of course. Everyone in Malaysia grows up with some Conchil stories. But Malaysia was and is still alive with 1,000 stories from all of the cultures there. We grow up knowing tales of the Orang Bunian. Oh. Everyone knows what a Hungry Ghost Festival is. The orchestras
are dead
everywhere.
That.
Cassandra,
yes?
I must tell you something. We may never meet, but if we do, I give you an offer. You share with me some Conchil stories, and I must tell you, you know, for a little mouse deer, he always takes on the bigger guys, whether it's tiger or crocodile. And, of course, he's a trickster's trickster. He is the Renard the Fox of Malaysia. He's
The coyote of
the Southwest. He is the raven of the Canadian. I mean, he
the Loki of the lookers.
Exactly. So you heard Conchil stories. I'll tell you what. You name the restaurant in New York. You have a dinner or lunch on me, moi, and that's a promise.
I may.
If you share Conchil stories with me,
whoops.
I just let me ask you a question. What actual part of Malaysia were you from? I mean, were you from one of the subdivision, you know, one of the federated places? Singapore?
No, I was born and raised in Kuala Lumpur. My father was from Penang, so I spent a lot of time between those two places.
Many of us heard of Malaysia during the Second World War, and unfortunately they were occupied as many other places were in the Far East. But again, Malaysia to me has always been this fascinating place. As Lord Dunsany always said, it is a place over the hills and far away and beyond the fields.
I promise you, it is as beautiful as you can imagine. It is still steeped in our culture, in our folklore. Oh. And at the same time, it is glittering skyscrapers and the best technology you can imagine.
You should realize, and I'll let you go when I just say this, when you've talked about Malaysian lore, my ears are jumping up and down like a Ferengi, like Quark, when he found out that he was going to the divine treasury or becoming the Grand Nagus of Ferenginar.
Then it turned out it was a woman, but yeah.
Yes. I know. By the way, James, I have a quick question to ask you. Is it true that there is a new Trek series online at the end of September?
It will be on CBS. For one episode, and then you have to pay to see it.
I see.
So it's a streaming service. It's called Discovery.
Well, Cassandra, thank you for making an otherwise very dull evening very pleasant and lovely with your story. You have a voice that sounds very musical, and I'm glad that James has had you, and I hope he has you for a live reading sometime.
He already has.
You missed it last week.
I missed it. I know.
It's online. People can go to live stream or to my Facebook page and watch it or hear it.
Yes. And the next time we talk, I want to know about your revisions of fairy, because you said the magic words, fairy tale revisions.
Okay, so we have a minute left. So.
Yes. All right. Anyway, good night.
Good night. And or good morning. Have you thought, Cassandra, of writing or causing somebody else to write some of those tales for non-Malaysians so that they can get spread around? I'll bet you that Neil Gaiman did not put any Malaysian gods into American Gods.
He didn't, which is probably why Rupert Wong happened.
Maybe so, but American Gods 2 is being written.
And I will not see any gods from Malaysia, so then, Neil Gaiman, fix this, please.
Oh, yeah, but maybe he will. In fact, I know who to speak to about that. And no, it's not Neil. But it's somebody who will be reading for us at the Nearsif readings. So
that's kind of awesome.
Yeah, that'll be in March, and that's all I'll say. I haven't made the announcement yet, so nobody will know. Actually, if anybody reads Norse Mythology by Neil Gaiman, which is a lot of fun, you'll see her name. Well, this was a delight. And I hope the first of several appearances.
I hope so, too.
Okay, good. So how long are you in New York right now?
I should be here until at least the 22nd.
Wow, okay. So that's... But a fleeting moment, and then a possible return?
Yes. Most likely I'll be in Japan for a little while. Then I'm doing a talk in Paris in October, and I'll be back. I have to go back to Malaysia for a bit, but then I'll be back in New York.
Okay, when you go to Paris, know that Delia Sherman and Ellen Kushner are currently staying in Paris. Mm-hmm. They are there for a year, and you should send them an email and say hi.
I absolutely will.
You absolutely should do that. They are wonderful people and good hosts, and you would like them, and vice versa.
Excellent.
Well, I've run over into your show.
That's okay.
Thank you, Lester. Thank you so much, Cassandra.
Thank you so much, Jim.
This was incredible fun and really good radio. I wish we had another hour or three to go for it, but we'll have you back. So
I will love that.
Yeah, likewise. So this has been Hour of the Wolf. My name is Jim Freund. Thank you all for listening. You can write me don't write me on Facebook. I don't like that. Write me at Jim. J-I-M at OurWolf.com, OurWolf, and visit me on Facebook under Jim Freund or Hour of the Wolf or the NYRSF Readings or the WBAI Radio Forum. I'm ubiquitous. At any rate, we will be back next week, I think, with Sam J. Miller if he's in town. If not, he'll be here the week after that. And until then, everybody, for God's sake and for your sake, be good to each other, will you? We all deserve it. Take care and stay tuned for Burn Baby Burn Clapper with Lister, the long missing Lister. Good morning.
Gone. atmosphere. And you're going to have to keep on saying that. You're going to have to say that I am a proletarian. I am
the
beast.
The red, white, and blue spit on you.
Myself, torching the symbol of oppression. Let that be a lesson to those that want suppression of the truth. Put on hold, the bold lose control, so they force obedience. Have you pledge allegiance to a piece of cloth? That's all the way I see it. While I'm going off berserk, cause the system work to jerk my people, the people all around the pig work. Tell me I'm wrong, though. That's my writing, is writing the Constitution. Yo, that's an illusion, huh? Suckers trying to change and rearrange. They say that I'm free, but they sure have a strange way of showing it. But I'm blowing the cover, the red, white, the blue, but the black for the brother. No lover of this flag like many others take the same turn like me. They yearn for the flag too. Burn the material of the imperialist in a blazing inferno. Cause my hurt is internal. The American dream, a nightmare. Wake up to the lies, the pigs make up imperialistic swans that I grind into bacon bits. Call the fist, cause I ain't taking shit. I'm not a Nazi or a Cappy or a Farmy, but you want me in prison, cause I'm busy attacking the flag. I ragging and snagging and dragging and rip it to shreds, cause I'm too black, too strong, too red, too dread. And I'm dreaded, cause I make the pigs tremble when I burn a symbol. Yo, I'm quick and nimble like Jack, but I'm a black man attacking the flag. I keep my torch handy, I'm no Yankee Doodle Dandy, so just hand me a flag from the fascists and watch me burn that piece of to ashes. Cause the real meaning is what the masses must learn. That's why the red, white, and blue must burn, baby, burn. Let's find the people who hate this. These are the places we'll hit.
Number one, Panama. Talking about Peru. Azania. Brixton. Belfast. Can't forget Korea. Beirut. Can't forget Haiti. Iran. Puerto Rico. Colombia. Mexico. Talk about uptown Harlem, New York City, y'all. And Nicaragua, East and South Central LA, California, IA, Miami. Do or die, Bed-Stuy. Never ran, never will, Brownsville. Boogie down, South Bronx. Yeah.
My man Joey to jail, and now they got him in court because he burned the flag.
Number one.
That's the name of the game. Well, I quit playing. I doubt the suckers want you to hear what I'm saying about this nation. Freedom supposed to be the format, but I step on your flag like it's a floor mat. Maim and mangle, the star spangled. I'm not trying to diss you. I use the flag like toilet tissue to wipe my black ass. What? You think that I'm a jackass? I see a flag and I attack fast with some fire. My desire to burn what Betty Ross sold up. The truth I show up about America, America. Home the free. Boom. This is the home of the slave. Now hold on just a mother minute. Yeah. You gave me freedom of speech in the First Amendment.
Yeah.
So why wanna scold me when I torched the flag? I'm only doing what you told me. You don't like it, so
99 singer Lister Live, back where he belongs. From running on the beach at Ocracoke Island in the news. 99 singer Lister Live, the flag burning shirt, 6 minutes after 3 o'clock. Jim Frine, thanks for sitting in now. Great show this morning, Jim Frine, great show. Yes, it's good to be back where Lister belongs. It's good to have you back where flag burning belongs, right here at 99 Cinco, y'all. Yeah.
But now watch no face, beg no more pardon. Enough drugs, money, they are cherry guarding. Enough individual society applauding. You can ask anybody where them get them starting. But enough politician take a donation. So enough criminal will never see a station. Never see a cell, not even a courthouse. But every Sunday we see them take a boat out. North Coast Resort and car dealership. The construction company, them just don't legit. Usually wash the money, turn it round and hide it. When they kick back, them come in, the government delight it. So, police cancel operation. Cause no real bad man a go station. Now if you check your situation, hey. A blood money running nation. Come take a look in a Jamaica. Injustice in the place now. If what you see no really faze you, hey. Then you are the problem what we face to. Was about to buy a next 60 now. Maybe then I never have to be a prisoner. Maybe then I could have not turn in my firearm. Police couldn't come remand. Come in like me run an army. Was about to be a politician too. Maybe then I could have make any decision look. Maybe then I make $100 million disappear. Then me act like me no care. Watch your boat me back in there. Because it's sad reality. In a Jamaica say your status or your salary. Man, the road I carry one whole heap of felony. But them have a family, a boost up the economy. So, police cancel operation. Cause no real bad man a go station.
99 Cinco, Barbuda, Anguilla, on my mind. 225 miles sustained speed, you know.
Injustice in the place now.
From
if all you see no really face you.
Irma.
Then you want the it's out of many, but a one set of people feeling
shame on the British,
it.
Oh, these British imperialists. Shame on them.
Things are revealed, they give
the Dutch, the French.
Spin.
No smoke screen. Shame on them. How they treat the folks in the Caribbean. Damn. And then when they see a byproduct of capitalism, they say, oh, people robbing people and sticking up people. Damn. What you expect?
That's how it's been always. That no frustrates you like it do to me. How much dead baby they over Jubilee? How much youth they 10 when they running at Tivoli? Now them 16 heart fry head fricassee. So, police cancel operation.
Yo.
Cause no real bad man a go station.
Yo.
This in the place now.
Listen up.
If what you see no really
the British,
busy,
you know.
Then you want the problem while
their true colors have been shown, you know. Irma passed through destroy Bermuda, right?
Maybe then
Anguilla, right?
Never have to be a
I mean, Barbuda, Biggie Pond,
maybe then
right?
I could not turn
they're supposed to take care of the folks down there. No, they're not interested. Like you know, if they wanted to build a prison in Barbuda, it's so fast to get down there and build that prison, right? To deport all the Barbudians, Jamaicans, West Indians out of their country in England. You know, that's typical of British imperialism. Listening to me? This is so sad. Theresa Mayhem, shame on you. Under capitalism, there are absolutely no winners. Then they accuse the people who live on the island who have been neglected in this 225 miles per hour wind situation called Irma. Dhaka, Irma.
Injustice in the place.
Listen.
If what you see
no
the
winners
really
on the capitalism, they accuse the folks of being ramming, stealing, you know, jacking up people,
real society you
as if they don't deserve
this.
It.
Things are revealed, the garbage, the machine spit. No smoke screen, a river and no conceal it. Now the system failing, the gap gets wider. A matter of time before a total divide ya. You cross the line, man, drop it to remind you. If you build it on crime, then crime will have to find you. And that's how it's been always. That no frustrate you like it do to me. How much dead baby they over Jubilee?
How much used to 10 when them running at Tivoli? Now them 16 hearts fry head fricassee. So, police cancel operation. Cause no real bad man a go station. Hey, now if you check his situation, a blood money running nation. Hey. Come take a look in a Jamaica. Injustice in the place now. Before you see no really face you, then you want the problem what we face to.
Bless and keep our